Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
If you don't have any money, you'll be in for stress and strife. Endless misery is not funny. Sad and dull will be your life. Sad and dull will be your life.
Well, who would have thought? But it was Beethoven who summed it up best. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. In the next hour, the Wigs, hot off their buzzed-about performance at the South by Southwest Festival, will join us to play live. But to begin, it's not just regular New Yorkers who are worried about their checkbooks in 2008. As the economy heads south, a brand new report commissioned by the Mellon Foundation offers sobering news for America's symphony orchestras. Among the report's findings, orchestras spend more than they take in, they pay their musicians and staff more than they can afford, and they don't cut costs when the going gets tough. In a moment, we'll get a reaction from one prominent orchestral boss, but first here to explain what it all means is the report's lead author, Stanford University economics professor Robert J. Flanagan. Bob, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you.
You write that even, and I'm going to quote you here, even if orchestras sold out every concert, the vast majority would still not be able to cover their performance expenses. That sounds like a fairly fundamental problem. What has gone wrong?
Well, this has been a characteristic of orchestras, of universities, and other not-for-profit organizations for at least a century. The expenses that they all incur to provide, in the case of orchestras, the concerts we all enjoy, in the case of universities and education, exceed the revenues that they collect either from the patrons of symphony orchestras or, in the case of universities, from the tuition amounts and the research amounts. So this is not a new development. The key fact, I think, is that the proportion of expenses, performance expenses that are covered by performance revenues continues to decline over time, even after you remove the effects of cyclical downturns, such as we're now experiencing.
So the costs have, you write that musician salaries, for example, have increased more rapidly than the pay of most other workers. So that disparity between what they're taking in and what they're putting out is growing larger. Is that basically what you're saying?
The discussion in the report pertains to expenses, total expenses, I should say. And incidentally, a small correction from your lead-in. The report does not say that symphony orchestras are paying musicians more than they can afford. It simply points out the fact that musician salaries have been rising quite rapidly relative to other groups in society, and that this is a fact that orchestras should consider, along with all the other, as they consider artistic expenses, along with all their other expenses.
Well, now, if they're facing red ink and, you know, deficits that won't go away even if they sell out every concert, what kind of answers are there? I mean, that sounds like, you know, it sounds like marketing isn't going to be the answer if even selling out an entire season doesn't help.
What the report shows is that there's no single solution that will solve the problem. The classic approach is to raise non-performance income, by which I mean the contributions from individuals, foundations, businesses, and also public support. In the United States, there is relatively little direct government support in comparison to other countries. But on the other hand, the fact that we all can deduct contributions to orchestras and other philanthropic organizations from our taxes means that there's a fair amount of indirect government support for the arts. So one approach is simply to keep trying to raise the non-performance income that orchestras can acquire. Obviously, the other two approaches are one to try and enhance revenues, even though, as you correctly point out, most orchestras that fill their halls still will not cover all their performance expenses. And secondly, to take a hard look at how far expenses are pushed and what the return a symphony organization gets for the last dollar spent in any expense category.
All right. We're speaking with Robert J. Flanagan, who joins us from the studios of Stanford University. He's the lead author of this study commissioned by the Mellon Foundation that talks about the state of America's symphony orchestras. Obviously, you know, Bob, we are a public radio station, a not-for-profit, and we, too, have, you know, done a lot of, as you put it, the classic nonprofit things like fundraising, gala events, going from major donors, in addition to, you know, kind of rank-and-file listener support. Are galas an effective way for an orchestra to do that sort of fundraising?
The information I had available in my report doesn't answer the question that specifically. That's probably a great question to put to Deborah Borden when she joins the discussion. What the report does say, looking at fundraising expenses as a whole, and this is probably one of the most provocative and in some ways puzzling findings of the report, is that for larger orchestras, on average, they take in fewer contributions than they spend on fundraising. That does not hold for smaller orchestras.
Hmm. So for a big orchestra, they invest a dollar in fundraising. They may not get that dollar back, whereas a smaller orchestra generally will make a modest profit on it.
Correct. That's okay. The outcome of the statistical analysis.
All right. I'm going to take your advice, Bob, and bring Deborah Borda in. Deborah Borda is the president and chief executive of the Los Angeles Philharmonic and took the reins in 2000 after leading the New York Philharmonic here in town for a number of years. Deborah, welcome to Soundcheck.
Great to be here. Great to be here.
First of all, congratulations. I understand today is the first day of rehearsals with the new music director, Gustavo Dudamel.
We appointed Gustavo Dudamel just about 1 year ago today, and this is the first time that he's back on the podium. There's tremendous excitement in the city. The tickets for his concerts right now are being sold on eBay because we are totally sold out for all nine. They're being sold on eBay for $400 to $500.
And are you making money on those concerts?
Well, you know, this is an interesting question, of course, and I have to say that I hope the industry doesn't feel really defensive about Professor Flanagan's work. And while I disagree with a number of the findings, which we'll talk about in a moment, you know, I think we should see this kind of work as a real help to stimulate debate and hopefully to encourage the development of really long-range adaptive strategies, which I think the field is deeply involved in right now. And while I really admire his regression analysis and the coefficients are very impressive, you know, we're talking about music, we're talking about art, we're talking about a mission of excellence, of music, of innovation, of many different things. And you know what it reminded me of, actually, is a few years ago, the NEA came out with a study that said, well, there's a serious decline in people reading literature. And there are some parallels, because it was interesting to me that it wasn't reported, you know, the headlines weren't literature in decline.
Hmm.
And instead, the report focused on how to get people to read more. And it also focused on the many societal challenges that we all face at all sorts of institutions, from healthcare to, you know, symphony orchestras to museums to, you know, the for-profit sector.
Well, now, that's a really interesting analogy, because, and it brings up a listener comment that we received from Samla, writing from White Plains, who writes, they, orchestras, should focus on expanding their programs beyond the traditional war horses that are trotted out year after year, and perhaps we can talk about that in a moment. But
that's a great point, actually.
Here's the one that I wanted to get, because this goes to what you were just talking about. Mm-hmm. There should also be more of an effort in the schools to promote their music departments, which are usually the areas that are the first to feel the effects of any budget cuts. That idea that literature and culture and the arts, you know, are somehow less important, it's a pervasive one, and I wonder, and let me bring Professor Flanagan. Bob, how deeply rooted is this the problem? I mean, is it something that you can't just look at the orchestras out of the context of the bigger society?
Well, of course they're part of the society, and of course the decisions that are made in schools regarding artistic exposure of children have a big effect on future audiences. The manager of the San Francisco Symphony has been quoted as saying that, I believe, 65 to 70% of their patrons are people who were involved in music or choral work, instrumental music or choral work, when they were younger people. When they were in grade school and high school. So decisions made at all levels of the educational chain essentially have important effects decades later on the audiences for symphonic music.
All right, let's actually hear one of those symphonies in action. We're speaking with Robert J. Flanagan from Stanford Graduate School of Business and with Deborah Borda, who leads this orchestra. She's the president and chief executive of the L.A. Philharmonic. This is their recording of the Sibelius Symphony No. 2. Los Angeles Philharmonic, Esa-Pekka Salonen conducting the Sibelius Symphony No. 2. Deborah Borda is the president of the L.A. Philharmonic. She's with us on the phone from L.A. Robert J. Flanagan's with us from the studios of Stanford University. We're talking about the recent report that he was the lead author of that talks about the sobering financial news that's facing America's symphony orchestras. Deborah, the L.A. Philharmonic in many ways is an exception. Apparently, the last year that we have figures for, the orchestra was running a surplus of $8 million. How does the L.A. Philharmonic stay in the black?
Well, that's a good question. And I think success in this business is about maximizing a realistic balance between earned income and contributed income. But it's also, as I said before, about the art. And I think orchestras throughout the country are telling that success story. But for us, we have a very diverse portfolio of concerts. We have a very rigorous business model. And this business model involves basic, very careful long-term planning that is set against what are the core goals of this institution, which are excellence and innovation, with a very heavy weighting towards innovation. And we worked in planning for these in an artistic, in really dialogue between artistic, marketing, finance, and I think bringing those together in an ability to take a long-term look at where we're going. And, you know, one of the other things I was thinking about is this industry is a veteran of hearing that we're about to drive off the cliff. The famous Baumol study in the 60s talked about this. And, of course, I mean, when we sell out Walt Disney Concert Hall, this only, recaptures a portion of the, about 45% of the expense. And that's true in every concert hall in the country. But the key fact is that people need to and do and are thinking of a variety of adaptive strategies, the use of the Internet, of new concert formats. And, in fact, it's a very exciting time for American orchestras because they are reacting. And, I think this is a very careful study, but much of the information, there are a couple of just small points, comes after the real downturn around 9/11. And there's really very strong statistics which show improvements in attendance after that. Also, in terms of the fundraising figures, I wonder if Professor Flanagan included the close to $3 billion that have been raised in endowment gifts during that time, or if he looked just at the annual fund. But these are small.
All right, well, raised the question, Bob. The years of study for this report, they included the time right after the attacks of 9/11, when there was a huge downturn throughout the cultural landscape. What you know, how were you able to kind of, you know, figure to allow for that in the report that eventually unfolded?
Yes, the report covers the period from 1987 through 2003 using annual data that are submitted by the orchestras themselves to the League of American Orchestras. And so in order to deal with the cyclical variations, some of which preceded the 9/11 or the recession that followed 9/11, basically the report includes efforts to control for the cyclical variations before testing for the effects of other variables. And as far as the endowment data go, again, the report uses the data that the symphonies report themselves to the league.
Okay.
But, of course, it would change considerably the money spent on per fundraising dollar, because, of course, it's the larger orchestras that are raising, you know, significant endowments, as well they should, for their future. And I do think that there was a significant change, and I think we all know that throughout the country after 2003. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of very good work in the report, but, I mean, these are two key areas that I think, you know, skew it in a way that is not as positive as it might be. On the other hand, I mean, I come back to say what the orchestra field is really focusing on is, you know, we've seen that cliff. We've seen that cliff for the past, you know, since the 60s. But somehow we figured out a way to at least drive parallel to it. And I think if you look at the good news stories of how the major orchestras are doing in this country, not just financially, but in terms of the artistic innovation, in terms of the Los Angeles Philharmonics, we're starting a program called Youth Orchestra LA. We're starting youth orchestras throughout the city, the San Francisco Symphony. And then the smaller orchestras that were endangered just a few years ago, the Long Island Philharmonic, the Santa Rosa Symphony, the Rochester, the Buffalo, they're adapting. They're figuring out ways to plan and to really speak to their core values of music and service to the community.
Well, I'm glad you actually bring up that topic of the smaller orchestras. Deborah Borda is the president of the L.A. Philharmonic, and Robert J. Flanagan is the author of this study on the fiscal hardships that face American symphony orchestras. There are several case studies in the report. Two of them, the Shreveport Symphony in severe financial straits and the Columbus Symphony, which, Bob, in your report, you write, faces a $1.4 million deficit. There was a board proposal to, or rather, not in the report, but these are the figures that we have, the board proposal to pare about $2.5 million from the budget for the next season, to cut the number of full-time musicians from 53 to 31, reduce the season by 12 weeks. You know, is that what it takes for a small orchestra to survive in this climate?
Well, first, let's be clear that the report says nothing about individual orchestras. It's an industry economic fact-finding study, and there's not a word in there about either Columbus or Shreveport. My hope, and I think the hope of some of the sponsors of the report, was by providing an analysis of how symphony policies, the economic capacity of areas, and competition between performing arts influence the economic health of symphonies. Individual symphonies could take their own local situation, compare that or contrast that with some of the results in the report, and make decisions about how best to avoid some of the hardship situations, such as the two you just described.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, against what most of us would prefer, this is an industry where bankruptcy or near bankruptcy situations occur more frequently than in other industries. And the point of doing a report like this is to try to provide some baseline information that people can use in deciding what are the best strategies for their own local symphonies.
All right. Now, Deborah?
Well, a couple of points there. First of all, I think that if you compare the number of orchestras that have, it gets a lot of attention when it happens because they are important in their communities. But, I mean, relative to other industries, I think you will see that all but nine orchestras came back into business, and the nine that went out of business were basically chamber orchestras, which is a different kind of issue. So I think that sounds much more draconian than what has actually taken place. But let me just look at another take. And first of all, I really agree with the professor that I think every every resolution, every plan has to be local. It has to be what works for the community in that particular orchestra. But I just take the example of the Los Angeles Philharmonic, if I could for a moment. When I arrived here in 2000, in that year, the orchestra was running a budget deficit of, in a single year, of over $7 million. Now, that is very, very serious, and that is the cliff being much closer than any of us want to be to it.
Mm.
But
so what did you do?
Through a very careful plan and through working really carefully with the board, because we haven't talked about the importance of boards of directors here, the decision to look at a long-term series of solutions and to invest to get there was really key to the health of the organization today. So I think these are, yes, of course, there are difficult times, and it's cyclical. It's cyclical for every orchestra.
Did you have
orchestras
to cut costs?
Orchestras are a microcosm of society.
Did you have to cut salaries and things like that?
No, we did not cut salaries.
Hmm. Now, let's just suppose, Deborah, that you woke up tomorrow not in L.A., but in Columbus. What would you do with the Columbus Symphony to try and turn that around?
What I would do would be to bring the board, the orchestra, and the community together, and I would do something. It would be something like a critical path study. I would try to isolate what are the very specific issues for that orchestra and to come up with a variety of strategies to deal with them and to map out a deliverable financial and artistic plan for the future that had measurements along the way in that roadmap to say, are we getting there or are we not? But it is very crucial for people to come together and talk about these things. But in doing it, they must understand what is at the root of their particular problem.
So think global but act local. That sort of thing
Absolutely.
Applies in this case as well. All right. Bob, let me ask you a final question. I mean, with all of the material that you amassed over the years that are encompassed in this study, if the orchestras do not change their business model, what's the future? Is there a future for the orchestra in America as we know it?
Well, I'm quite positive on the future for orchestras. I think the biggest danger is that orchestras that may not be apprised of these results on the economics of the industry would be drawn to single solutions. And as I state in the conclusions, I think as you read the orchestra report as a whole, you sense the futility of single solutions. You said at the outset that most orchestras cannot cover their performance expenses by filling their halls. That's one example. It's clear from the analyses of marketing expenditures that most orchestras will not solve their problems solely by marketing expenditures because they run into diminishing returns. Seem to be limits to fundraising expenses, and the data that the orchestras submit indicates that they cannot do it by prudent rates of withdrawal from endowments. So it's, as Deborah Borda said, it's a question of finding a portfolio of strategies that works locally rather than putting all your eggs in one basket.
All right. Robert J. Flanagan is the author of the study we've been talking about, joining us from the studios of Stanford University, where he is a professor of economics. And we've been speaking with Deborah Borda, the president of the Los Angeles Philharmonic as well. Bob, Deborah, thank you both for being with us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to
thank
talk
you.
To you
both.
And here is a little bit of music from another of the L.A. Philharmonic's digital-only releases, a little bit of music from the contemporary composer. They've built a large portion of their portfolio around contemporary music. This is by Arvo Pärt. Coming up next, we'll be listening to a live performance of some music from a band out of Athens, Georgia, called The Wigs. You're hearing them in the background. They'll talk about the new wave of Southern rock, and they'll play live, unplugged, for us here in our Soundcheck studio. That's coming up next.